All right, it is 8:01. I think we'll go ahead and get started. Welcome everybody officially from across the world. We have a wonderful group today. Looks like there's a lot of interest in this topic. I am Marissa Reynoso. I am the marketing manager here at PCI Pharma Services. With me is Rich Nelson. And Rich has over 15 years of experience helping clients manage clinical supplies logistics, so we are really lucky that he is willing to let us have him on this chat while he's stuck in his house during this time. So thanks, Rich, for being with us. So on that note, I would like to turn it over to you to get this party started.
Thanks, Marissa. First and foremost, I'd like to say thank you to everyone for joining us this morning. I'm stunned and humbled at the number of people that have decided to join me around the water cooler today. I hope you're all staying safe and sane as you navigate through this completely unprecedented and interesting period of time that we're in. As we deal with that, as we deal with the changing landscape of what was a shrinking world, and now we have to try to figure out what the new normal is going to be. One of the challenges for us at PCI is to keep on top of where we can reach, where we can go, where we can get to with the least amount of difficulty for you as our clients, because we want to make sure, of course, that we're able to maintain our supply chain to your sites into your patients, regardless of where they are in the world and regardless of what's going on in the world. So today's chat, we decided we were going to just talk about one of the countries that has become more and more common in over, I would say, the last 18 months in terms of sponsor companies wanting to ship into it, and that's Japan. If you've worked with PCI in the past, you may have received from me or from one of our business development team a map of the world where different countries are either green, yellow, or red. What that map is, if you've seen it, is I try to keep track of which countries are more difficult or less difficult to ship materials into, and then I give them a traffic light color. So just there to give an easy visual representation of, you know, if you should expect a month to get into a country or 2 weeks or just a couple of days. So Japan has always been one of those countries that I've colored in as a yellow country. So it's a moderately difficult country. And it's a little bit confusing as to why. There's really no extremely difficult part of shipping material into Japan. The most complicated part of shipping into Japan is the formality and the organization of it that is entirely unique to shipping into Japan. There's no protracted waiting for an import license. There's no extremely difficult application process that you have to go to. If it weren't for the formality, you could theoretically function without using a depot in country. But because of the import formalities, we consider Japan to be one of those countries that always needs to have a depot. Sorry, if you see me look down, it's just because I'm checking my chat for questions. If you do have any questions, please feel free to type them in. I'm constantly looking at the scrolling screen here. So if you do have any questions, please go ahead and type them into the chat bar, and I'll answer them as they pop up. So that formality is what causes the difficulty for Japan. Most countries, you have an exporter of record, which if PCI is making the shipment for you, that would be us, and you have an importer of record on the opposite side of the shipment, which is typically going to be your CRO. Sometimes it might be PCI, depending on where we're shipping to. But for Japan, there's an extra layer, and that layer can be the same as your CRO, but it depends on the ability of the CRO. It's typically referred to as an ICC or an in-country caretaker. And that entity represents the importer to the Japanese government. They're responsible for recovering the package from the airline, transferring it to the customs warehouse where it's going to be cleared through, then presenting the documents and the import paperwork to customs, and then answering any problems. I do have one question here. Hey, Jose, how are you? Good to see you. Thanks for joining. To import IP to Japan, does it need to already be labeled, or can we ship bright stock and label at a local depot in Japan? That is probably not going to be possible because of one of the things that is typically presented as part of the entry paperwork is the text of the clinical label. So you can do just-in-time labeling where you can have, you know, a protocol-specific label or an expiry update label or something like that affixed at the point of distribution, but the clinical label is usually part of what has to be presented, so you're not going to be able to send in bright stock materials. And the second part of the question, is it required to be labeled prior to import, and does it have to be single panel? No, it can be booklets. Booklets are fine. And again, because of the complexity of the import process, it's not really feasible to use a regional depot. The amount of time that would be absorbed for every shipment makes it not a practical process to ship from anywhere else. And there's a lot of potential problems that could come up, and I'll get to a couple of those in a few minutes. Thanks for the question, though. Like I said, anybody else has any, please just type them into the chat, and I'll grab them as they pop up. So the in-country caretaker is responsible for the actual presentation of the shipment to customs. I call it the presentation because it is a very regimented process. Before you can even make the shipment, that in-country caretaker needs to be communicating with the exporter of record and should be telling your exporter, your shipper, your packaging company, PCI, or whoever else it is, exactly what documents need to be included with the shipment. They can range from, like I said, label text, C of A's, to copies of CTAs. If you have comparators, they're going to ask for data on the comparators. The pedigree of your materials needs to be included with the shipment. In addition, your commercial invoice needs to be incredibly precise. And sometimes they ask for it in local currency, in yen. Other times they ask for it in dollars. But you also, one thing that is unique to that commercial invoice for Japan is you need to include the value of your packaging. You need to include the value of your temperature monitors. You need to include the value of the freight that you're spending, to the shipping freight that's going to get the shipment there. All those things actually need to be captured as part of the import for Japan. So that, like I said, that is a completely unique parameter for Japanese imports, where you need to list the temp tail and the cost of the insulated shipping system and so on. Everything needs to be documented out. And if you've got blinded kits, those blinded kits need to be separated out into the number of active doses in a kit and the placebo doses in a kit, so that the value of each commodity can be specifically and exactly shown on your invoice. Michael, can we ship bulk DP to PCI Japan for bottling and labeling after arrival in Japan? So the depot partner that we use in Japan does not have packaging capacity. They can do secondary labeling operations, But they are not a fully functional packaging location. So what we would be needing to do is package in either, you know, Rockford or Bridgend or Melbourne, and then ship it out to or San Diego, and then ship it over to Japan, because we don't actually have packaging facilities in Japan. So once you've got all this documentation in place and prepared exactly as the in-country caretaker has asked for it to be prepared, then you'll get your green light to ship. Shipment will head on over, and again, the ICC will take the responsibility of retrieving it from the airline, taking it to the customs warehouse, and physically presenting that packet of documents that came with the shipment to a customs agent. I've even had situations where the order of the documents was told to me to put them in a specific pile, so that when the ICC handed them over to the customs inspector, everything was in the order that the ICC believed the inspector would like to see them in. So, like I said, it is a very regimented process. And if you make a mistake, if a document is missing, the entire process stops. And not only does it start over, but you start over from the back of the line. So the individual attention that the inspector is giving you during the inspection process is, you know, because it's individual, you go to the back of that line. So you're going to end up with all kinds of delays if you don't have everything in order and prepared the way the ICC has asked you to prepare it. Now, to go back to one of the questions earlier about, is it preferred to have a regional hub or to have a local depot? Part of the reason you can't really have a regional hub is because, in addition to the paperwork being thoroughly inspected and the expectation that it is exactly the way it's supposed to be the first time, the package itself is going to be physically inspected. Couriers going into Japan know that they have to maintain a certain physical condition of a shipment. There can't be tears in the cartons or any sort of damage, crushed corners or anything like that to the packaging. They expect the package to come in looking pristine. And if you were shipping directly to a site, that would be really difficult to maintain over a course of, you know, from even from Australia into Tokyo or Kyoto, having that package coming off the airline and being pristine would be very difficult. So part of what the in-country caretaker needs to do is make sure, again, that the physical appearance of the shipment is as perfect as it can possibly be. If you were to try to take a shipment that had any sort of exterior damage and take it to a site, this site investigator would most likely just refuse to accept it because it wasn't up to the standards that they expect it to be at. The delivery process to the sites is every bit as formal as the entry process into the country, where everything is done by appointment and there are white gloved couriers bringing the unmarked and undamaged box of goods to the delivery look point. So there's nothing overly difficult. There's no document that you're going to have a real hard time finding or a permit that you're going to have a real hard time obtaining involved. It is simply just the most precise and regimented process as far as importation goes than in the entire world from my perspective. How do sponsors typically calculate the value of investigational drug and placebo? Is there a conversion cost?
Rich, so just one second.
Sure.
My apologies. So I'm noticing, I'm getting some text messages that some people have not been able to put questions in via chat. My apologies. That's a different setting I was trying this week. I've now changed it back to the original setting that has worked in the past. So for those of you who may have been trying to put in a question and haven't been able to, if you can please try again. Thank you.
Thanks, Marissa.
Back to you, Rich.
Mm-hmm. Apologies, everyone, if you were trying to get something in. Mike, back to your question. So the valuation for Japan is very regimented as well. The expectation of the value calculation is not only that it is as precise as humanly possible, but also that it is verifiable. You could be asked to show if you have, you know, IP and placebo, you may be asked to show proof of how much that material cost when you purchased it. But the way value is calculated in Japan is, again, unique to Japan, where they expect the value of the drug itself, the value of the cost it took to ship it from the manufacturer to the packager, the cost of the packaging itself, the cost of having the material placed into the packaging, the cost of the label being created, the cost of the label being put on the packaging, the cost of it being stored at your packaging vendor while all this is taking place, and then the cost of it being shipped to Japan should all be incorporated into the value of a single kit. So it's, I usually tell customers, you've got to come up with the cost it would, the value should be assigned as how much it would cost you to replace it if it was lost. Valuation for Japan is even, again, another step further in precision and depth, where you have to start factoring in things like how much have you paid in storage for it to be sitting at PCI while we did the packaging and while we got ready to ship it. So that's how valuation is supposed to happen. And like I said, you can be asked for proof if the valuation that you put on the invoice doesn't appear. If they do question it, you can be asked for proof of how much it cost you to obtain all the various things that are included in it. Excuse my voice. Next question, how are temperature controlled products inspected physically by customs while maintaining temperature? So the bonded customs warehouse where they're stored has the storage facilities for the various temperatures. So if you have a refrigerated product, it's stored in a refrigerated section of the customs warehouse, and the airline maintains access to it. So if there needs to be phase change bricks changed out or dry ice added or anything like that, they maintain the ability to do that while it's in the customs warehouse. I've never had any issues with any shipments that were temperature controlled having any sort of excursions during the customs clearance process. Again, the airlines and the customs team are experienced in dealing with all that and handle it whenever necessary. Do you have a list of, I lost that. Do you have a list of the paperwork? Sorry, I'm just scrolling back up in the questions here. Do you have a list of the paperwork involved in the importation process? It's real hard to make a list like that because it's going to be different depending on your product and depending on your study. Usually it's just a copy of the CTA, C of A's for any material that you're going to send, GMP compliance certificates from, you know, like the packaging batch records, excuse me, and pretty much standard documentation that you would normally have access to. But it's hard to have a definitive list because it does change depending on the product and depending on if it's a commercially available, if it's commercially available in Japan but not commercially available in, you know, the US or the UK where we're sending it from. There could be additional things that might need to be added to that packet. Um, What is the timeframe should be allotted for identifying a shipment from bridge end to being received at the depot, at Japan Depot? So, hi Tammy, how are you? Hope you're doing well. The shipment process, when you ask PCI to make the shipment, you know, our output timeline is 3 to 5 days for that shipment. Because that's how long it takes us to get the shipment ready from a physical perspective. During that same amount of time, we need to be in contact with the in-country caretaker so that we can nail down all the details of the document pack that's going to go with it. Usually we can hammer those details out in parallel with the physical preparation of the shipment in the warehouse. So the timeline from the point when the order gets sent to PCI to when we're physically capable of making the shipment should pretty much stay in that 3 to 5 day window. Transit is, you know, 1 to 2 days, and then the customs clearance process, usually if you have everything done properly ahead of time, usually only takes another 1 or 2 days. It's not a long process, as long as you have everything set up right. So then you add the time for the receipt at the depot, and it falls into that 2 to 3 week period from, you know, the time the order was generated to the time that the material can be sent to the sites. You're looking at a span of about 2 to 3 weeks, which is pretty standard for any sort of international depot to depot transfer. HTS codes required? Yes, HTS codes are required. And like I said, you have to break your commodities down line by line. If you have an active and a placebo kit, you have to separate out how many, you know, tablets in the blister card are active, give a harmonized tariff code for the active, and then how many placebo tablets there are, and have a harmonized tariff code for the placebo so that they can assess the taxes correct at the correct rates on the two different kinds of material in the card. We again would work those out with the in-country caretaker before we would ever make the shipment. Harmonized tariff codes, I don't know how familiar you are with them, Michael, but the first 6 digits of a harmonized tariff code are the same around the world. So if I'm using, you know, 3104.90 as the first 6 numbers of my code, those are going to be the same in Japan. The last 4 digits might be different, but again, we would hammer that out before we would ever make the shipment. That's part of the back and forth process that we go through with the in-country caretaker. Leah, is there anything additional we should be considering due to COVID-19, added costs, more time, or restrictions? Well, the added costs and more time part of the equation, that's happening everywhere right now, because flights are not nearly as common as they were. The flight availability is what's changing the timelines. You know, there used to be flights every day out of O'Hare or LAX to basically anywhere they needed to go. That's changed significantly. So our couriers are either having to come up with creative routing plans or going to the use of cargo flights. Because cargo flights don't have the same restrictions as passenger flights. The problem with cargo flights is the owners of those flights don't want them taking off half empty. So they might, your package might wait a couple of days extra to get on that cargo flight because the facilitator of that flight doesn't want a half empty plane flying to Japan. It's not worth their money then. So they might wait a couple extra days till they can fill up and book up some more shipments. And that might slow things down a little bit. But that's going to be true everywhere in the world, not specifically to Japan. As far as restrictions go, there are no current restrictions that I'm aware of. The CDC and the WHO are both You know, they've done testing to see if what the lifespan of the virus is outside of a human host. And there has been some, you know, showing of it being able to last for, you know, several hours or even a couple of days, depending on the surface that it's affixed to or landed upon. But those were laboratory settings where that was done. There have been zero reported cases worldwide, and this statement was true as of the 21st, so as of 2 days ago. There are zero reported cases of COVID-19 being transferred via contact with an inert surface. So like people go to the grocery store, they come back from the grocery store, they disinfect everything they bought, they wipe everything off with alcohol that they just bought at the grocery store. According to both the CDC and the WHO, that type of thing is not actually necessary because, again, as of the 21st, there have been zero confirmed cases of transference via an inert surface. Moving down, can the local depot process expiry updates and IP returns and destructions? Thank you, Mariah. The answer to that is yes to both. The depot can do any type of, like I said, secondary labeling where they can put a strike through label with a new date over it, or a just in time label where they add the expiration date to the previously existing label at the point of distribution. And they can also absolutely facilitate returns, reconciliations, destructions, any sort of login to an IRT where they would need to, you know, complete a returns module. Our depot partner in Japan can do all of those things for you. Is the valuation similar to that needed for the EU? It's more precise. The EU valuation model, like I said, is usually, I just say, you know, how much would it cost you to replace this if it were lost or damaged? The Japanese valuation model is more precise, where you have to factor in a lot of other things. Like I did an exercise once with a company who was, you know, based in Japan, where not only did I have to figure out how much had been spent on the storage of their material, which meant I had to know how long each different lot that had been used had been stored in my facility, but then I also had to figure out how much tax had been processed against that storage cost. So it was like a never-ending rabbit hole where you kept drilling down level after level, and you had to keep adding different parts of valuation. Now that exercise, when I had to do that, was part of an audit that was being done in preparation for commercial filing in Japan. So it was a very, very intensive dive into the value of the product. But it does, again, it's more intense than the EU valuation model.
Hey, Rich, we are at time, but I see we still have a few questions that we haven't gotten to yet. Do you have 5 minutes? I think we have like about four more questions.
I'm happy to stay here and okay, to answer everything before for everybody. And and of course, if I don't get to your question, or if you have any questions that you think of after, you know, we close down the chat, mm-hmm, please feel free to email me. My email address is very simple. It's just rich.nelson@pci services, and I'm happy to, you know, continue the conversation and the sharing of information through emails after we're done here. But yeah, I'll try to get, Marissa, as long as you're fine with leaving the chat running, I'm fine with trying to get through
just
the rest of the questions.
One more item to everyone so that we don't bog down Rich with a number of emails. There will be a survey that goes out after this chat where we will be asking you if you have any additional questions. So if you do have any additional questions, feel free to answer via our survey there so that we can go to Rich and we can get that information to you at a later date. All right, back to you, Rich.
Thank you. So are the typical couriers FedEx and World Courier? So the transfer from the material from, you know, the U.S. to Japan. We could do that with any courier. We could do that with World Courier. We can do that with Quickstat, Marken, or PDP. Those are the four main international couriers we use. I don't recommend using FedEx for international drug shipments because of the tracking visibility that you, and the temperature control maintenance. They don't really have that apparatus as part of their logistics chain. Once the material's in Japan, the deliveries are handled by a transportation company attached to our depot partner. Our depot partner in Japan is World Courier. So World Courier is actually making, World Courier's transportation division is making those site deliveries from the depot to the site. But we could make the shipment to Japan with any courier. We typically do what the in-country caretaker asks. If the in-country caretaker says, please use this courier, we're accustomed to working with them, we know them, and we are experienced with the handover process with them, so please use them, then that's who we would use. Again, the key to success in this process is partnership with that, between your shipper and your in-country caretaker. The documents do not need to be translated into Japanese. The only thing that might be necessary in Japanese is if they ask for a copy of the CTA. That would have to be in Japanese, but that typically would come to you in Japanese, so you would already have that. Has PCI encountered any delays? Again, the only delays that we've seen, April, are the ones that are related to flight availability. There hasn't been any sort of lockdown or stoppage of shipments going into Japan. It's simply a matter of there aren't as many planes in the air right now. And again, if it's a cargo flight, they're going to want to make the most economical way of executing that flight is to have the plane be full. So the what used to be an everyday flight from LAX to Tokyo might not exist anymore. So the only delays we're seeing are the ones related to when is the flight actually available to get across. If PCI does not convert bulk drug product to package label investigable product in Japan, are there other clinical packaging and labeling CROs in Japan that do so? Unfortunately, I don't know. That's never a question I've been asked before. I've never had to attempt to make a shipment of unlabeled material into Japan. I know there are packaging companies there because I've received shipments of packaged material from packagers in Japan. But then we still had to put the clinical labels on them at PCI. So I honestly do not know the answer to that question. So I apologize for that. What is PCI's policy on retain requirements per packaging and labeling run? The FDA doesn't require for US only labeled IP. How about OUS? So our policy, PCI's internal policy for any sort of retain samples is that we retain what you tell us to retain. We don't take samples for our own purposes or keep anything that you do not specifically tell us to take. So if you've got a requirement to maintain samples from the FDA or from a health ministry in another country, we will hold them for you, but that would be part of, the packaging batch record that we would work out with you guys before we, did the packaging operations or the labeling operations, and we would only ever take what you tell us to take. I think I got one more here. Does a PCI representative personally handle Japanese import issues on behalf of the sponsor? So if we're the exporter of record for the shipment, if there's an issue with the paperwork, if there's an issue with the shipment, if there's an issue with the documents, like I said, we would hopefully have set everything up with the in-country caretaker ahead of time But if there is any problem with what we gave to the in-country caretaker, we would absolutely address those. They would not have to go back through to the sponsor, unless the only way it would come back through the sponsor is if I needed to get something from you. I would work with directly. I ask, as soon as we know Japan's going to be a shipping country in your study, I ask, can you please put me in contact with your in-country caretaker or your CRO or whoever's going to be responsible for the customs clearance so that we can start working everything out. And if there's any sorts of problems, I fix those. Again, the only time you would need to get involved at all is if I needed something from you and, I had to ask you for it. But as far as the working through any of the issues, that's absolutely something that, that we would take care of on your behalf.
All right. I think that was it, Rich.
Yep.
Were you able to give any of your prepared presentation materials? Looks like this was a very, very interactive discussion here.
There's actually the only really prepared presentation material that would go with this particular chat would be that map that I spoke of at the beginning with the color coding, which I'm more than happy to share with everyone.
Great. Okay, and we can make sure to get that out to everybody. So, Rich, thank you so much for taking everybody's questions. Everyone, I hope you found that to be useful. If I may direct your attention to the screen, I just wanted to share some other chats that we have coming up. As you can see, we have next week, we're going to be revisiting direct to patient again. That seems to be a topic that there are a lot of questions around. Gavin Morgan, who is our senior manager of global logistics in the EU, he will be leading that discussion. So if you do have any questions about DTP, please join us next week. Week after that, Rich will be back to talk about importing into China. And then in June, we will have a session with our smart services lead, Ed Grollo, about cell and gene therapy. This is a new water cooler chat that we have just opened registration up to this week. So if you have not registered for this chat yet, I suggest that you register for it. And then the week after that, on June 18, we will be reviewing supply solutions for small companies where time and resource is definitely a huge factor in the success of clinical trials. That will be led by Mark Schapansky, who is our lead at the San Diego site. He has ample experience in helping small companies to start their clinical trials successfully. So on that note, thank you very much, everyone. Really appreciated your time, and we hope to see you at a future water cooler chat. Bye.
Thank you again, everybody. Stay safe, stay sane. Talk to you all later.